Today we're reading Bamidbar chapter 19, interestingly being recorded on Erev Shabbos Purim, where we read this chapter precisely. But now we're reading it in the context of Sef Bamidbar, so we have to talk a minute about the context. So as we've discussed, this Sef Bamidbar has these groups of mitzvahs, right? We just came from a group of mitzvahs, which we explained very well yesterday, how it really is connected with the answer to the question, the establishment of the hierarchy of the Kehanim and the Levim and everyone else, in a way in which we can understand by giving this story and explaining how this is really all in response to certain challenges, to certain questions. But now, this is the last mitzvah in this series. There's one more mitzvah that seems to not connect to that, although there's one way in which it's connected, as the Ramban notes here. But it seems not to be connected with that. It's not about like Matnas Kehuna. It's not establishing the hierarchy, the levels of access to the Mishkan and things like that. That's not what it's doing. One thing in which it might be connected, I don't know if this is entirely pshat, but the Ramban says it's connected in one way, which is that the Kohen is mentioned here a lot, and it's also, I think, the Medrash counted that says 9 times HaKohen. So there seems to be a point in which the Kohen is in charge of this Tahara, and this may be interesting, maybe it's important, maybe it's part of the whole thing. If we connect it with this context, we'll say something like the Mikdash is protected from people, impure people, or not purified people, not holy people, accessing it. One of the main ways in which it's protected by that is, right, in the general, and even someone, even when he is pure, a Yisrael, or someone who's not authorized, not a Kohen, cannot go. But even a Kohen, or even in the ways in which a Yisrael could go, when he is impure, when he is Tumel and Nefesh, especially, he cannot go, as we've learned in Parshas Baal Oischem. And as we just learned, the one in charge of that is really the Kohen. The Kohen is the one in charge of Mishmeres HaMishkan, right? They have to watch that nobody who doesn't belong should be able to go into the Mishkan, and that's the job of the Kohen. And here we give the Kohen also the other side of the job. So that's maybe the nice thing, like we've been saying. The Kohen is not only the one in charge of the harsh hierarchical structure, he's also in charge of making sure that taking the responsibility for who will come and taking responsibility for the people that will not come and giving them blessings. We've seen that in Parshas Baal Oischem also. Parshas Nosei, right? Sorry. Nosei. Berachas Kehanim. So maybe in this sense, the Kohen is the one who is creating this Tahara, this Mechatas, which will purify the one who is Tomel HaNefesh, the one who was impurified, became not pure by touching a dead body. That's the Kohen in charge. And this is interesting because, you know, there's different ways of becoming pure. We learned in Parshat Tazria, there's chibas begodim, or going to the mikveh, which are washing with water, as the Torah calls it. And those are things that it's not the Kohen's responsibility. It's just, you know, whoever wants to become purified, so he has to go to the mikveh, or he has to get purified in whichever way he gets purified. Here, there's a new kind of purification, which the Kohen, it's the Kohen's job to do it. Of course, it's not entirely the only one that's like this, because this connects really to a series of purifications that work through karbonis, through a kind of carbon. So I think that's the simple meaning of this whole story. So we see that there's two parts in it, really. First part is the hakrava, the kind of carbon. It's not entirely a carbon. It works more like a chatas anis refes. In any case, a kind of shechita, a kind of carbon, which then what is left from that carbon, the ash from that carbon, becomes the purification. But it's for sure true still that the shechitas carbon and the whole process of sort of creating this efrepora, it's a kind of chatas. Let's just call the chatas over here. It's a kind of chatas, which is similar to the chatas, all the chatas anis refes, which over there we sprinkle their blood on the mezbeach and so on, but they all have a similar logic where there's a carbon that causes also a purification. Generally, carbonates are not for purification, therefore something called kapura, atonement, or for simcha, like a zevach, things like that. But there are certain carbonates, like the carbonates of miluim, which are also were done in this book, right? And again, in Parshas, mostly in Parshas in Sefer Vayikra, but the carbonates of miluim, which are also their job or part of their job is to purify. So in a similar way, this is a carbon whose job is different. Of course, also a nozir has a carbon like this, or a yeledes, there are what's called mechaser kapara. Some tumas need also a carbon to purify them. Just bringing a carbon, but here it's not just bringing a carbon; it's that the carbon itself becomes somehow the, we call the detergent, right? The thing that purifies you. So that's this parsha, and that's one way of connecting it to where we're coming from. The Ramban says this; he says that it belongs here because it's all to tell us that it's all a kohen that does it. But in a broader sense, this is just really an appendix to the parshas of Tumah v'Tahara, which are really in Sefer VaYikra. Even the halachas of this tumah, this is an interesting thing, right? And Tazria, Metzora, we had, I mentioned the pasuk, Tzarua, Zav, and Tumah l'Nefesh are a set that are mentioned in Parshas Nusli when we send them out of the camp. And now, sorry, in Baalos Chara, when we send them out of the camp, we mentioned this. I'm confused. In any case, when we send them out of the camp, we have this three sets. So Tzarua, Zav, those are things that their way of purification is mentioned explicitly in Parshas Tazria. Parshas Dria and then Parshas Metzora, but Tumel Nefesh, the Tumemes, what we call Tumemes, or the called Tumel Nefesh, is not mentioned. It's mentioned that he's impure. We mentioned also that a coin in Parshas Emma, we discussed that a coin is not allowed to ever touch it. We mentioned about a nozir in the same way in Parshas Nosla, that a nozir doesn't become impure the Nefesh. But we did not mention how to purify it, and this is the only place where the purification of that is mentioned. So it's sort of the wrong place. Possibly because it's a longer, complicated process, although the Metzora as well as a complicated process, it's there. It's not clear why it's here, so maybe the reason that I gave is a reason, or could have to do also with the idea of the expansion that we discussed, that this is the expansion, and in some sense, Tumah l'Nefesh is like the furthest, right? Remember, being entirely dead is being not part of the community, unless you're dead in a way in which you stay part of the community. But in any case, in some sense, and this pur aduma is also something done mechutz lamachne, the shechita, the sreifa, all that is done mechutz lamachne. So this might have to do in another way, and it has to do with the general theme of Sefer Midbar, which is expand all the way to the edge of the machne. We could also see, in some sense, like the story of Korach, or the stories of the challenges to the machne, right? The challenge and shlach Korach. These are all challenges to the machne, to the like structure of the machne, and therefore, in sort of being metapol, sort of working with what's outside, then now it goes all the way outside mechutz lamachna and could even purify that. So that's another way of saying it. So, anyways, let's read. So, as we said, there's two parts. The first part is the creation, the masa hapara, and then the second part is the hilches tumas mes, or the hilches tara and tumas mes. So, first we have Hashem speak to Moshe and Aharon, and this is its header. Zos chukas haTorah. This is the law. I think chukah doesn't really law means something like the ritual, the order that is always. A set order is called the chukah or the seder. The order of the and Torah is a teaching, like the Torah, like Torah's Kan, with many, many, many parshas with the header Torah. So that's, I think, chukas haTorah. I've written about this at length to explain chukas haTorah. Chukas haTorah says one more time also in Sefer Midbar. And this is what Hashem commanded: speak to the Eden, and they will do this. We'll give you. They should bring you a pura aduma, a red cow. So that's the, of course, that's the halacha is named after the redness, the pura aduma. It's very important that it should be red. Probably to symbolize blood or something like that. It should be whole, tamima, right? Now, thani mum, that's every karma is like that. And it explains, tamima shenem bamim. There's the chachamim understand tamima to be something to do with the redness. It should be fully red. But I think literally it's just the same thing as em bamim. And ashele ole ole oil. Also, we have something similar by the egle arufim. So a pura who has not had a yoke on it. So if it had a yoke, it's like it's a work animal. We don't want a work animal. We want something that is a fresh pura, so it's entirely sacrificed to this, it's entirely dedicated to this, and they will take it. So again, this is also a structure that we have many times here by the Shemaz Aizach, by other things. The people, it's sort of their responsibility to bring it, and they give it to Elazar HaKohen. So again, Elazar HaKohen, that's also interesting, we discussed yesterday in the previous chapter. Aharon HaKohen, this story seems to be given in a time when Aharon HaKohen is already older or less capable of doing everything, so it's Elazar, of course. Maybe Elazar was always helping him, but there's some aspect of the giving over of the kohanut to Elazar already over here, I think. And what will Elazar do? He will take out this pura to the outside of the camp, and he will v'shachat oisa lefonav. He will slaughter it in front of him. Apparently, someone else will slaughter it in front of him, or he will slaughter it in front of the camp or something like that. And then what he will do is take the dam, like I said, it's very similar to the all the chatois and esrefais, which we take their blood and we sprinkle it on the parochas, towards the parochas. Here he's not doing it literally on the parochas, already starts, other than the regular chatas on his refes, which you sprinkle the blood inside. Even the opposite, some of them get even brought inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This one, he's sprinkling the blood towards the Pnei Almayit, towards the face, the side of the Almayit, but not there, it's just like in that direction. So seven times is the amount of all these kind of sprinklings. In some sense, what this means, it's symbolically, it's purifying the Mikdash from the Tumas Mes. Since the Mikdash also would have become impure, at least if someone was a Tumas would go there, or in general, since the Kedusha of the Mishkan spreads to the whole camp, so anyone that's a Tumas Mes, somehow that touches the Mikdash and makes it impure. So also the Mikdash is getting purified by this blood, by the seven times of the sprinkling of the blood of the Paraduma. So the Zrikas Adam, and then he burns it, like all the put us on his surface, he burns the whole thing, all of it, its skin, its flesh, its blood, all of it, its insides, its intestines, it burns all of it, one all at once. And then he does something that reminds us of what we did in Mitzrayim by the Karim Pesach, reminds us of what we do from Mitzrayim. So again, these seems to be things that have to do with purification. He takes these three ingredients. It's erez, a wood of this of an erez tree. Erez is some kind of grass or some kind of specific kind of grass. And shnitelas is a shnitelas we have also in the Mishkan, right? A red, some kind of red wool. And he throws them into the together, so he burns it along with these ingredients. And that's basically the process of creation. Now that's the ma'aseh ha'pura, and then the kohen from doing this becomes impure because. And of course, this is famously said to be a paradox of Purim, but it's not really a paradox, because like if you take a detergent and you wash something, and then the thing that you washed with becomes dirty. That's just how life works. It's very normal. It's a very normal thing. So in the same way, the person that touches this, like touching dirt, so he gets dirty. So therefore, he washes his clothes, he washes himself, and then he could come back to the camp, and until the evening, he will be tumah. So this is what we call tvil yom. So in other words, he's purified, but he still has to wait till the end of the day, because in some sense, like the day became impure for him. Okay, so that's the kohen, and now we see that the kohen himself didn't do all of this, as we said. He supervised it, or he's the one responsible ritually for it, but he's not the only one. There might be other people helping. The same thing for them; they have to do the same things. So now there's another step. Now after this whole process was done, after the putter was slaughtered, was burnt. And the people taking care of that would finish their part of the work. Now we have a third person, maybe might have been the same person, but the point is a third step after it's all burned. A pure person comes and gathers the ashes of the pura, and he puts it in a pure place outside of the machna. Now it becomes mishmeres, something watched over there. We called mei nida, water of sprinkling, water that we sprinkle, chatas, mei nida or mei chatas, is both names of this thing. These are waters that will purify other things. Now this person, this third person, also the same thing, he becomes tumah, and he has the same halacha as the previous two people. Now this will become a law forever for the Bnei Yisrael, for any strangers, any that live within them, will be the same law. This will be, so now we have the story with how we made this ingredient, this thing, mei nida, mei chatas, and now we're going to learn what we do with it, right? So what we're going to learn is, if someone touches a dead person, he will be impure for 7 days, and what that means is a minimum 7 days, really, because he doesn't just automatically become pure after 7 days, unlike maybe some other things which might happen that way. But no, he has to be cleaned with this menida on the third day, and therefore on the seventh day he will become purified. That's the literal way of reading. The Kris Chachamim understand that we have to sprinkle also on the seventh day, but that depends on how you read this pasuk, either Vayem HaShlishi uVayem HaShvi'i or Vayem HaShlishi uVayem HaShvi'itar. In any case, if he will not sprinkle on the third day, then he will not become before the 7 days. I think this is really saying what I just said. There are some things, maybe a nida, again, that can be discussed. After 7 days, they automatically become pure. No, it's not. Or like someone before, with the tfil yom, in the evening, he becomes pure, of course, if he washed himself during the day. So there is also something he has to do. In the same way here, if you do the menida, then in the seventh day, you become pure. Otherwise, you don't. And there we have a punishment. If you do this, your tumah, you touch a dead person, and you did not dischata, you did not purify yourself, then you're metama the mishkan, and you get kuras because you did not purify yourself with the menida, and you're still impure. Tumah oitumas, but you're still impure. So that's the law of how the purification of the tumas mess works. We still didn't learn the laws of what is who becomes impure, or how it becomes impure, or what else becomes impure, and that's the second part. Zoyis HaTorah. So this is the law. Maybe we could understand that until now is chukas, like it said, chukas olam, and now is the Torah part. So there's two parts, chukas ha-Torah, there's the chukah part and the Torah part. And the Torah is just the instructions of who becomes impure and how, and therefore we'll need this purification. So before we just learned about someone who touches. Now we're going to learn that not only someone who touches, but also someone who is in the same tent, the same oil as the dead person, then he becomes impure. Everyone who, any person who's in the oil or anything, any vessels, anything in it. Now, specifically, which vessels? Only open ones. Only an open vessel, which doesn't have a closed cover tightly closed on it, at that becomes tumah. But if it's closed, then sort of like the tumah doesn't go into it. Now, this is not only a way of becoming impure in a tent. That's one way if someone dies in a tent. But sometimes people die outside, especially in war. They die in the field. We'll see later in the story of Melchemes Midian, but that's the implementation of this halacha. So if you touch a dead person in the field, whether it was a halal cherev, someone was killed by the sword in a war, or just someone died, or a third way in which someone might find a dead person in the field, if he doesn't find a dead person, he finds the bones of a dead person or a grave of a dead person also. Those are graves that are usually in the field. So also, it will have the same halacha, will be impure for 7 days, and they will do the same exact thing. They will take this efer of the, here it's called the afar seref zechat, it's like the sand, but the same thing, it means the ashes. And now we have some more instructions of how it's done. Interestingly, before that we just said yischata. Now it gives you more details how you do it. You put fresh water, mayim chayim, water from a living source, from a spring, into a vessel, and you take a ezev, again, not the same ezev that was burnt, and add a new ezev, and you dip it into the water, and with that you sprinkle it on whoever needs to sprinkle. Again, this entirely reminds us of what we did in Mitzrayim, when we sprinkled with ezev. And it gives you what, and it adds, the Pasuk tells you, we sprinkle in all these things that we just discussed, the oil, or the things that were in the oil, or the people that were in the oil, or someone who touched a bone, or a dead person, or killed that person, or just that person, or a grave, and it has to be done by a pure person. So this is the fourth person, right? We had the Kohen, we had the Seref, we had the Oisef, and now we have the Mazeh, the person who sprinkles the water. He also has to be pure, and he will also become impure, right? Same thing. The person who is mazeh also becomes impure. That's what it says here, at least. And again, we have this repeat of the punishment if you don't. So in other words, to include also all these details. If you are impure in any of these ways and you did not purify yourself, the same thing. You go to the Mikdash, you're metame the Mikdash, and you're still tame. And this, all of this is, again, a chukas olam, a continuous order. It does not something that was just once. And here we have these four people, a summary of these four people who become impure. Someone who, the one who sprinkles the menedah, the one who touches it, so that's a new thing, someone who touches it, or anyone who an impure person touches also becomes tameh. So if you touch a dead person, then you yourself become tameh, the next person who you touch becomes tameh, but the person who touches that is not tameh forever, only until the evening. That's the simple meaning of this parsha, and that's, we finished this parsha.